Welcome to White Pill Radio, the roughly every other episode version of Theology on Air, which is an outgrowth of Theology by the Pint, a monthly gathering in Houston where around craft beer we talk about theological, ethical, philosophical, moral, social issues, all with, you know, a good spirit and a lot of fun, but maybe a little controversy mixed in too. So, thanks for joining us today. I'm Evan McClanahan. I'm a pastor at First Lutheran. I am joined, as almost all the time, by Sarah Stone.
Hey, hey.
Grand Poobah of Theology by the Pint, and Kim Cowan.
I'm an accountant.
He's on the board for Theology by the Pint and volunteer extraordinaire. You'll meet him at any live event you come to, which we do encourage you to do. We have some great ones coming up.
Yep.
We have one about aliens and or demons.
Yeah.
Christian nationalism. So touching a lot of hot button issues. So we want you to subscribe to the podcast if you're watching this on YouTube. Subscribe to YouTube, our YouTube channel, if you're listening to this on the podcast. All of that helps us out. Go to theologybythepint.org to learn about future episodes, how you can give. Did you say at the event the other night, by the way, that if you give
$50
a month, you go to come to every event for free?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, that
because it's $600 a year, and I think it's over $500 a year gets you like free entrance.
Seems like a good deal to me.
Cool.
So, pop it up to $100 a month, you get to bring a friend.
Nice. Yeah. All right, so do check out Theology by the Pint. Hey, we don't run ads. We're not monetizing our our YouTube channel or anything like that. We're, you know, but we do need people to subscribe and become partners and all that kind of stuff. And we're a 501c3, so like write it off or something.
Or if you go to a church that would want to host us.
Yes.
That's the thing I'm on the hunt for right now.
Oh, okay. More host churches. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today.
Yep.
So let's just jump in. This was one that made headlines, I think, for pretty. Oh wait, you know what? I didn't say my tagline.
I like to say this is blessed talk, but not happy talk.
That's
we are a post-apologetic,
ultimately hopeful applied theology. Yes, that looks at current events with a Christian worldview. So yes, but definitely is blessed talk, not happy talk. That's for sure.
That's a good segue into the first.
So let's
article
get. Real. Okay. This made news for obvious reasons. I think obvious reasons. This is from nationalpost.com. Quebec man has two healthy fingers amputated to relieve, quote, body integrity dysmorphia.
Dysphoria.
I'm sorry. What did I say? Dysmorphia? It's not even a word.
It is a word.
Body dysmorphia is like what either powerlifters have or anorexic girls.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But yep. he, this person
it's very
just has
similar.
Dysphoria.
This guy thinks he ought to have fewer fingers.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Ever since he was a child, he'd had incessant, intrusive thoughts about his left hand's fourth and fifth fingers, the sensation that they weren't his, that they didn't belong to his body. At night, he'd wake up from nightmares that his fingers were burning or rotting. The young Quebec man was so desperate to get rid of his fingers, he contemplated building a small makeshift guillotine. He couldn't imagine himself living for the years to come with those fingers, according to a recently published case report. Instead, a surgeon at his local hospital agreed to an elective amputation in what is being called the first described case of digits amputation for body integrity dysphoria, or BID, a rare and complex condition characterized by an intense desire to amputate a perfectly healthy body part such as an arm or a leg. Well, we could go on. Yay or nay to cutting off fingers if you don't like them anymore.
Oh my gosh. The first thing I thought was this poor man can never play guitar. I mean, among other
well,
things.
Well, no, there was that super famous jazz guitarist, like that French gypsy guy.
He could play guitar, but it's going to be tough.
Okay, sorry.
Spoiler
60%.
Alert. 60%. Spoiler alert for The Last of Us. It involves somebody losing their fingers and trying to play guitar. So I recommend playing or watching The Last of Us. It's good.
Okay.
The Last of Us.
I've heard it's good.
Oh, it's a zombie movie or show.
Okay.
Very good.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the obvious connection is the current transgender craze, which is removing healthy body parts because one feels that they do not
belong. Yeah.
You know, and so the meta question here, and we've talked about this at various live events, various podcasts, is kind of the connection between soul and body. Like, what are you? Is your soul gendered? You know, if something is out of step with your mind, like, let me ask it this way. Did this person have a mental disorder, for lack of a better way to say it, or
obviously,
a physical disorder? Well, I mean, the surgeon said it was physical, right? I mean, they worked, but his solution was ultimately physical.
Solution was physical.
Well, there are other mental disorders with the physical, the body dysmorphia, body dysphoria, right? I mean, body dysmorphia is a mental disorder that has a physical solution, right?
Yeah.
to, I mean, there
it has a physical solution that is alongside a mental
solution. Exactly. But that's what I'm saying.
Which this wasn't.
Right. It's not just like, I don't know, prescribe them SSRIs.
And, right. Yeah. No, we make them eat and give them feeding tubes or whatever the case may be. My thing, it's interesting when I saw this article come through that when I get into conversations with people that don't agree with me about gender affirming, quote, care for adults, like let's take the kids stuff off the table for now. I've asked the question sometimes to get into how much autonomy ought a person have over their body. And I'll say, well, if someone went to their doctor, a grown up, and said, I don't feel like I should have a leg. But there was that story a while back about the lady that thought she should be blind.
Right.
And she gouged her eyes out.
She's on Dr. Phil. And that group
that went viral. Anyway, but I've asked friends, like, if someone goes to the doctor and they are perfectly autonomous and willing to pay for this and they want a leg removed, should the doctor do it? And of course, most people will say the person should be allowed to ask for that because we should have like freedom over our bodies. But the doc, that's a trickier question because doctors have taken an oath to do no harm. And is that doing harm if this is what the person feels ought to be? And the fact that we're having that conversation at all and there's any gray area to it is like just so astonishing to me.
Well, it seems to reflect a widely enough recognized change in how we understand what a human being is.
Yeah.
You know, so we used to assume that and now it's up for grabs. Basically, a person gets to determine what kind of a being they are.
I think it has to do with who we belong to. Like, yeah. If you think that you are in charge of yourself and you answer to yourself and you're your own God, if that's even a term you would use, then yeah, you could chop off whatever you want. But if you think you belong to someone else, which Christians ought to think that, then it changes things.
So where's your limiting principle?
Yeah.
Like, where's the limiting principle bringing it?
Right, because we cut our hair and we
Get
Botox or I don't know.
Should people, I was literally about to say Botox and lip fillers. Yeah. Should people be allowed to do that?
I do not have either, so I feel like I can speak. No, it's true that I don't have either. Sure. But
because I am the anarchist, and I'm viewing this from a, do you use a gun to stop the doctor or the patient from doing this, right?
Right.
We all agree this is kind of nuts.
Yeah.
However, what is the solution? Is the solution, you know, the individual solution? It's probably a lot of therapy.
Sure. Learning to play guitar. Okay.
Sorry. The political, low-key, that actually would be a really
good, I thought about it. If this was my child and they were saying that, I'd be like, piano, let's take up guitar. Something that needs the fingers.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, for sure. Learn to type.
Make beauty.
Like,
learn to type. Sorry.
It's like learn to code.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going, Ken. Sorry.
But, like, so there is the, like, social question, which is, like, you know, what should their community be pressuring them to do? And then there's the political question, which is, what should you or me be voting for a politician to send a gun to stop the doctor or the person from doing this?
Right.
That's the question.
But yeah, I guess like, isn't this just treating the symptom though? You know, I mean, is that what medicine is? Is that what psychological medicine is? I mean, isn't there a root cause here that must be addressed?
Well, Ozempic treats the symptom.
Not, oh, snap.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the drug to lose weight. That's
It's
meant for something else, but
what do you mean? Like, because it makes you not be hungry?
Right. When the underlying condition is a caloric intake, right? You have a caloric excess, right? Yeah.
Ken hates fat people. You should know this.
I don't hate
fat people. I'm joking. He doesn't.
Michelle Obama hates fat people.
But meaning instead of treating what has gotten you to the place of being obese. Or
doctors do that all the time.
Yeah.
There's the famous magician.
But you wouldn't actually compare Ozempic to cutting two fingers off.
I'm not.
I'm using that
as an example to counteract the, well.
Right. Right.
Do we treat the symptom or do we treat the you know, underlying cause? Gotcha. Right? We treat the symptom all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
That's what I'm comparing.
And to answer your question, Ken, like do we vote to put laws in place politically? There's already a law in place politically for this. It's the Hippocratic Oath that physicians in America take, not just America, but that starts with this.
That's a culture, not a law.
You could be a doctor without taking it?
Actually they've changed it. No, I mean, lots of medical schools have these bizarro social justice oaths they're taking now to like,
But it doesn't include do no harm?
No, there's not.
I don't think we have a definition of harm, right?
Exactly.
This is kind of my meta point is that like we don't actually have an agreement about what harm would be because they would just say, oh, well, it's more harmful. Well, you know,
right.
In the aggregate, is it more harmful for him to have a nightmare about losing two fingers?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Now, if this guy can't hold a, he, there's a job he can't do. Does he get to go on like the welfare dole? No, oh. Because he's
get disability.
Like, yeah. What if there's a job? What if any job he needed required 10 fingers and he's only got 8. So in a sense, we're underwriting because all of us pay insurance premiums or taxes or however this was paid for. I think it's like Canada. So maybe doesn't matter to us, but you get the idea. It's like, in a sense, like the citizens are underwriting this surgery. Does he have to sign something that says, I will never request government benefits as a result of this or something?
Sarah.
And, you know, and if that's the case, then maybe I'd be like, go ahead, cut them all off. I don't care.
Sarah, I don't hate fat people.
Oh, I know.
But people with diabetes lose their feet all the time, and it's the exact same problem.
Yeah.
Right? Should with diabetes be able to go on disability?
I don't think it's the same problem because they didn't willfully choose
to do what?
Yeah, well, to cut their fingers off.
The feet.
You're going to say...
Isn't that just a gradation thing?
That's what I'm saying.
They didn't eat well. I would say they're a victim of the United States food complex.
Oh, you know? Well, don't do that.
You agree.
No, I don't agree. No.
You don't?
No.
I don't know.
Supersize Me was garbage. No.
Okay, well...
Calories in, calories out. That's it.
I'm going to walk
No, I don't. I don't. I don't know about that, but I don't know enough about diabetes to say. I will say that like half of America is either diabetic or pre-diabetic. That wasn't the case 20, 30 years ago. I think something has changed. I don't think it's how much we eat. I do think it's what we're eating and how our bodies are unable to process the foods that we're eating.
Or some combination there.
So but I don't know enough about diabetes. I mean, are you saying that like people have diabetes because they eat too much sugar?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
They eat too much carbs and sugar. Well,
that I agree
carbs
with.
And sugar come in... Like
I'm getting so hungry.
GMO or non-GMO.
Yeah.
You could eat oranges all day long and get diabetes, right? Yeah. Like, you know, non-GMO organic oranges
and you'll
get diabetes. Right. Diabetes comes from carbs and sugar.
But there are some, and the last word on this, but there are some mitigating like factors to that. Like, for example, if you try to get insurance and you do blood work or you do a health test, like it's way more expensive if you're not healthy.
Yep.
So there are like some market kind of factors to that.
The Christian health, what are they called?
I know what you're talking about.
Medishare.
Healthshare.
Yeah. Medishare. Yeah.
That's actually why I didn't join up with that one.
A lot of them say, don't, like, if we give you a premium, if you don't drink, don't smoke. Dude, I should probably sign up for one of those tomorrow.
Yeah. You totally should, because you're our resident teetotaler.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, don't chop your fingers off. That's what I would say. Okay.
Talk to your community.
Speaking of, let's see, slippery slopes, changing societal norms.
What you do with your body.
What is a polycule?
I'm so glad you asked.
Did I say that right?
Sure.
Yes, you did.
It's a made-up word between like poly,
all words are made
polyamory.
Up.
Well, okay, that's fine. It's a recent made-up word. But it's not a recent phenomenon. So this is from an article from the New York Times. Says the word polycule is a synthesis of polyamory, engaging in multiple romantic relationships, and molecules, so just a collection of something. It's not clear when the word was coined, but it seems to have started catching on around 15 years ago to suggest an intricate structure formed of people with overlapping deep attachments, romantic, sexual, sensual, platonic. It's difficult to describe a polycule. It's not for me. I think it's basically a commune. But anyway, or an orgy. Words like family and network are used, but neither on its own captures it. Perhaps it's best to let a polycule itself offer descriptions. So this article basically interviews some people from a polycule in Massachusetts, Boston, that, by the way, has been going on for 4 years. So this is not just some like fad and in, you know, a few weeks it's going to be over. I'll just give you like one of the little snippets. I mean, they're all talking about it's not just an orgy because sometimes it's not sexual. Sometimes it's like cuddling. Sometimes it's just... basically being friends. Like, we're all going to go have dinner after this.
She described it as a weird family that's sometimes kinky.
Well,
in the article.
That's one thing that one person said.
Yeah.
So their polycule is pretty big. It's like 20 plus people. And there's different iterations, but like almost all of them identify as some kind of queer. So there's several non-binaries. I think all of the like female at birth women in the group either identify as queer, non-binary, or trans. Anyway, so, but I wanted to read, let me see, a couple of little sections here. Oh yeah. So there are self-identified males who identify as heteroflexible. Being flexible is good if you're going to be in an orgy. Can I say
actually,
that
actually,
on
it's one of my points the other night, which is that when you try to use the argument about orientation, like I am gay, like I am a gay person, so that therefore it's okay for me to perform those acts. I'm like, dude, do you know how many straight men, you know, do gay acts? So... That's anyway.
I appreciate that, but my joke was
quite
lost.
Common.
Then they're not. I'm sorry. Straight.
Oh, there was a joke.
Hey guys, Sarah Stone here. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a riveting podcast episode, but Theology by the Pint needs your help to continue providing these podcasts, offering our in-person events, and growing so we can bring thoughtful conversation and the hope of the gospel to a world that's increasingly walking away from church and from faith. Now that we're a 501c3 nonprofit, all donations are tax deductible, so we've crunched the numbers, and if each listener of this episode gave just $1 for each episode you listen to, we'd put a huge dent in our annual budget. So consider giving today. Go to theologybythepint.org/give and click the... I said heteroflexible. That's good to be flexible if you're going to be in an orgy.
Well, that's what I was going to say earlier. You said, like, you know, all of them are queer, and I'm like...
I messed it up.
Yeah, duh. Like,
no, I know.
If you're in a, like, if you're in a hippie commune,
any wherever, variation like, outside of two, by definition.
By definition, you're going to be bi.
Were you talking about, like, playing the game Twister? That's
basically.
Okay, yeah. Oh, no. Okay, all right.
It's naked Twister. Here we go.
All right.
Okay. Every femme-presenting person or woman identifies as queer. A lot of people are married and have primary partnerships. They're coming to it from the opening of a monogamous relationship. So they started monogamously. So this is part of this broader ethical non-monogamy that's, and I happen to know that this is very trendy right now, not just because I have friends that are in this world, but being in the online dating scene, which up until 6 months ago, I was a lot of people on my sites, Bumble and Hinge and these like very, like just regular, you know, apps, are saying that they're ethically non-monogamous, ENM, or polyamorous. And if you walk into Barnes & Noble right now, there is a whole section that at the top of it will be the ethical slut, which was written several years ago. Basically...
Seem like contradictions in terms.
Right, I know. Okay. Well, the whole thing is, and it's funny because I think part of the reason this caught my eye is because I'm in the last few minutes of the read right now. One of our other members that comes on here sometimes to speak, Austin Freeman, got me into reading the book Strange Rites. And it's basically about all of these, quote, religions that people would not call a religion that are essentially offering them what church offers Christians. But let me go on because you'll see some of, I mean, if you just listen carefully, one of the guys that, you know, they're using fake names and stuff, but there's a guy, Robert, who's Anne's husband, he says, we have this motto, feelings are not facts. That's true. That gets us through the hard times. At the start, I was going through some depression, and when we had sex, I had so much stress. There were issues in the bedroom with her, and that happened many times. And basically, his wife found this guy who Robert calls a total stud, and then it made him feel really jealous. And then he says, but medication helped me. Talk therapy helped me. Changing the way we do things helped. That's where feelings are not facts really mattered, because I would ask her questions, and she would be like, no, I don't feel that way. And I would be like, this is, by the way, in the New York Times written like this. I know you like being with him more than me. And she would say, I'm not lying to you. It's different, but it doesn't make me love you less. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I could go on and on. What I think is interesting about this, somebody that's in our group chat said something like, oh, this is a trend that'll like be dead before too long. It will not. This has gone back. Do you know how many verses there are in the Bible that talk about orgies? Like, this is why. This is what this is. I mean, it's not just an orgy. It's not just an eyes wide shut situation, but it is going against what I think God has set up as a good institution. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that the people in here are looking for, God has already set up institutions to give that to you. Like to be completely accepted and to be one with another person. Well, we have an institution for that, you know, to be part of a community where people are loved. And they talk in here about how they care about each other. And when, you know, someone's struggling, they all rally around them. Well, we have an institution for that. Right. But there's this like utter rebellion that says, well, we can't enjoy the institution of marriage because that puts too many restrictions on us sexually. And we can't enjoy the institution of religion / the church because that puts, you know, too many parameters on us. So we're going to make this own thing. But then laughably, they're just making their own church, you know? So anyway,
with none of the ethics.
Yeah. And it will end up eating itself. I mean,
I'd love to see the, you know, it's like the cult shows, right? Like at some point, someone comes out of it and is like, let me tell you what it's really like.
Yeah.
Like it all, I know that you know, the like, you ever see the documentary Wild Wild
Wild Country? Wild, I was going to say, yes. Wild Wild Country. Yeah.
Yes. Now it's a Young Life camp.
It's like Oregon or something, right?
Yeah. With the Rajneesh, what's his name? Anyway, but it was like, it was just a sex cult. I mean, that's all.
There's been sex cults forever.
Yes. It's nothing new. And, you know, people want to undo the Garden of Eden. I mean, that's all it is. Mm. People want to transgress boundaries that people mm-hmm. want, you know, people want. You know, a strange, as they call it, as the young people call it, right? So, it's not unusual. It's not, you know, I mean, pornography for a lot of people fills that role, but I think people are like, oh, forget that. I want the real thing. You mm-hmm. know, there's really no Christian kind of worldview that's so saturated anymore that's preventing it. But I do think it'll end very poorly. That's the white pill. And even for like, I do think there's a lot of like normal couples that are like, hey, maybe we add a third person. I don't think that's probably that abnormal. You know, or people that just date
in Houston suburbs, we have a huge swinging community.
Yeah. How do you know?
I interviewed for a job where they were like, you should know this is a thing in this suburb. But I will just read this one other little section, then I can be done with this. This is later in the article. It's talking about a woman who she's part of the situation where her husband, she was at home chatting with one of her lovers on the bathroom floor, and she got a text from her husband. It says, so we sat on the bathroom floor chatting about our relationship all night. And while that was happening, my husband was texting to say, oh, I got a last minute match. By the way, there are apps that are just for ethically non-monogamous people. So if you're listening, use your own apps and get off mine. I mean, I'm not on it anymore, but someone else is and is annoyed by that. Okay. So she got a text from her husband texting to say, oh, I got a last minute match. So I'm going to meet this girl for a date. And then I get a text while we're still on the bathroom floor vibing. It was 4 a.m. and he said, we had a great day, a great connection. She's looking for friends with benefits. We had sex and I was smiling. You know, you're really polyamorous when you're with one of your partners talking about how much you love each other and you're so happy your husband had this awesome night. Of course, I experienced pangs of jealousy, but there are some of these moments, these gems of being so happy, blah, blah. And I thought as I read that section, what this person is doing, and I can only say this because I've done the same thing, not in this particular way, where you feel a tinge of something that is an appropriate response, right? Like maybe it's guilt or something doesn't feel right about this because something isn't right. And you push it down for the sake of this other thing that you have put up as a god in your life. And if you do that enough, yeah, it quote works mm-hmm. because you've shoved that down enough that then it doesn't feel as raw the next mm-hmm. time and the next time and the next time. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make it right or good. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Can I flip it?
Please.
To the
and reverse it.
And
sorry, I had a Missy Elliott.
That's a really old song.
That is so good.
It's never
good.
Heard it.
She does this whole like backwards talking thing, yes. But it's not satanic, I promise. So like you all are friends with Pentecostals, right? They grew up with the jean skirts and like the hyper conservative. Like I do think, obviously, this is the far, far, far extreme of don't even let your jealous feelings bother you.
Hmm.
But there's the other extreme, which we in the Christian community have to, you know, contest with, which is like getting jealous that your, you know, wife or girlfriend or actually the Pentecostals don't have girlfriends.
courtship partner.
The person they're courting. Even like said hi to another man.
Right.
Right. There's a ton of that in the purity culture and the church.
Yeah.
I do think there is a spectrum in which, you know, this is the far, far, far jealousy doesn't matter. But there's also like, you know, jealousy is a problem a lot of the time.
Oh, and I think you're actually just making my point for me, which is that the jealousy I'm talking about that's happening here is it's good and right.
Sure.
And when those people are feeling it, they've stretched something that is still good and right. They're just, like you said, the pendulum has swung the other way, I guess. But jealousy isn't the problem, right? Like the Lord is jealous of us. If your wife were acting inappropriately, you'd be jealous, rightly so. So I guess the question is it a right?
Does the jealousy read pendulum belong in the middle, right? Because if it pulls all the way back and you're too jealous,
sure.
Then, you know, that's really like.
And not being jealous at all is a problem too.
Right.
Yeah.
You have, you know, women in burkas, right? If the jealousy spectrum is all the way to the back in religious communities, you have women in like blue jean skirts that aren't allowed to talk to men. And then when the jealousy is all the way on the other side of the spectrum where it doesn't matter at all, then you get this, right?
Right.
I think, you know, everything in balance. I think the jealousy probably, the pendulum probably needs to be in the middle where you're not freaked out that your spouse has a friend of the opposite gender, but you're also not like really excited about that, like this person. It's sure. Like, ah, oh, that's, they're both kind of
Yeah. Well, yeah. Just like any sense that you have, any emotion or feeling or something that sort of crops up in you that's, you know, not a tangible thing, you have to take it and you have to compare it against some kind of standard. Sure. Right. Which gets back to the man cutting off his fingers. Like, who did he belong to? And in this case, who do I belong to? And who does my, if I had a husband, belong to? And what are sort of the rules that have been set up such that I can read that jealousy and say, well, this is good jealousy or bad jealousy? Anyway.
Cool.
I just can't imagine these men who are.
I know, right?
I mean, come on, dude. Like, you're, oh, man. Like, it's like, is that what modern therapy is? Like, it does to men? Like, there's a line in there, like, well, I talked to my therapist about it.
And he's on medication.
I'm like,
if you have to do that much work to be okay with something.
My guess is that the men will, they're sacrificing the humiliation in order to be polygamous, basically. That's probably the trade they're making. You know, it's like, yeah, this is basically ritually humiliating for a man, maybe for a woman too. I don't know.
I just closed it down, but the article did talk about, like, this is all run by women. The women make the rules. And then, like, two sentences later, and it's like, we love not having rules. Oh, okay. Yeah. But anyway, I think at least this is totally anecdotal, and I could be wrong about this, but the stories that I've heard a lot of times are women that were in a monogamous relationship and they wanted to step outside of that and explore polyamory, and their husbands didn't want to at first, but because they love their wives and they wanted to keep that relationship, they explored it. And then, so it's not just husbands that are cheating. They're like, get on board, you know? It's like, it's almost the reverse.
As far as cheating and you mentioned humiliation, like, unpack that. What do you mean by humiliation? Because I'm thinking of an example, Hosea, who certainly wasn't happy about his wife, you know, getting stooped by every single, you know, guy that she could find. But then, like, he does, like, is that a humiliating story, you know?
Yeah.
It is. To say, but like, then that would say we humiliate God because that's the actual. Well,
or he is,
he condescends
to come to us.
Well, let's talk about the word humiliation and like.
Made humble, made low.
Right.
Wasn't Jesus made low? Didn't he choose to, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Get cucked by the Israel people? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Speaking of Israel.
Oh, no.
Okay.
All right.
That was a wonderful segue.
Yeah. There's a war going on, and it seems to be expanding every day.
And the Christian community is having so much fun, specifically the evangelical Christians. Mm-hmm. Pastor John Hagee, this is about 2 days ago, says, Iran's missiles are the prophetic start of Gog and Magog war from the Bible that ends with Jesus returning and the Jews either being killed or converted. Hagee says he will travel to D.C. to lobby lawmakers not to de-escalate and to support Israel. Wow. Also give him money.
That's Ken's addition, but not wrong.
So he's got a big church in San Antonio, and he's like Israel flags fly in the background, and he's big into the
dispensationalist like chart, and he's like, yeah, here's the rapture, here's the
watching for those blood moons, baby.
Yep. Yeah, no, every blood moon he has a
yeah. No, he wrote a book about the blood moons, and
he was real big when I was growing up. I grew up Southern Baptist, and
how old is this guy? Because I've known that.
He's got to be about 80.
About 80, but like, I grew up on the.
He probably just wants the world to end so he can be around for it, because he's not going to be around much longer.
What's frustrating is when I listen to, say, conservative-ish, but not necessarily like Christian influencers, podcasters, all that kind of stuff, and you know, these kind of people come up, you know, or people kind of casually mention, you know, like the eclipse, you know, and people talking about that. It's very frustrating. You know, we don't know the day or the hour. You know, I mean, I'm firmly in the you know, the amillennial camp. We are living through the 1,000-year reign of Christ now.
But you know. Quick pause, because there are plenty. I just feel like our audience.
Yes.
There are plenty of premillennialists and or dispensationalists who don't believe all this crazy nonsense.
I have lots of friends that like that are dispensational
friends.
I love them all.
Yeah, and for a thorough rundown of all that, we just put out a podcast where the Eschaton Salon. So y'all, you know, go back and listen to that. But I just it's unfortunate. You know, I'm tending to view this now as a ugly regional skirmish. Israel a couple of weeks ago killed someone in Iran. And then Iran sent some missiles, you know, toward Israel. And it seemed like a half-hearted attempt. I think a lot of people are even saying, like, it didn't really do any damage. It was like a face-saving measure. Like, Iran had to convince their people.
Right. So they
that
can
they're
back
still
to their
in
people.
Charge. Yeah. And like, hey, we're fighting back. We did all we can. Mm-hmm. And now Israel's, you know, attacking yesterday or today.
Literally or this night. Morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So it, I don't, for me, the question is, are the united forces against Israel, the kind of Muslim world, are they going to actually try to do what they say they want to do, which is wipe Israel off the face of the earth?
Well, not Saudi Arabia. That's the interesting part. The Muslim world isn't one thing, right?
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, like, well, that's what Trump, the Trump Accord.
The Jordanian monarchy.
Abraham.
They're fighting back. They're some of the ones shooting down the Iranian missiles.
It's really interesting to see that the Muslim world isn't one thing, right?
No.
Which is really frustrating when you talk to Christians that just know, like, oh, that over there is all the Muslims, right?
And
it's really, really, really complicated.
Well, Iraq and Iran, you know, they warred for years, and we, you know, that's why Saddam Hussein was our friend, you know, because we didn't like the Khomeini, so we empowered the Saddam Husseins of the world in Iraq, and then later we didn't like them, and, you know, it seems like that never works out well.
Why don't we like Khomeini? Didn't we overthrow the Shah?
Isn't that funny? Let's see. So we overthrew
Iran
that
could
government,
have a revolution.
Then we overthrew that government, then we overthrew that, you know, government, and, you know, Osama bin Laden somewhere in there. Anyway, but yeah, it's I'm trying to figure out if like this is the start of a truly cataclysmic Middle Eastern war where Israel's gonna. I mean, the thing is, like, Israel though can pretty much defend itself, and it does have a few allies. Whether or not we need to particularly be involved, I think for the most part they don't necessarily want us to be that involved. I mean, they probably want our money, but
they do want our money.
Even then, we are literally borrowing money like from China. to give to Israel. I mean, none of it makes any sense. So,
no, but just to push back a little bit on is this just a little skirmish where it's like we killed their top guy and then they had to have a show of power and then we had to, and I say we as if I'm Israel, which of course I'm not, but I am on that side. But this, it's not like it started with them a few weeks ago killing the Iranian leader. I mean, it started back in the Bible, but I mean, this particular iteration of what we're looking for started on October 7th when Hamas attacked Israel, and Hamas is an arm of the Iranian government. I mean, they're a proxy group. No? Are they not funded by Iran?
They're funded by us too.
But by way of Iran?
What are you talking about?
That was for humanitarian reasons.
I mean,
which I'm sure they earmarked. You're an accountant. They earmarked.
There's
it
so many
carefully.
Scare quotes in here. If you,
I think you're talking about the accounting principle of fungibility, which is if you have it in a bucket.
Well, I was being sarcastic.
But. Well, I mean, no. It's actually for real because Hamas isn't one thing.
Right.
Hamas is the people that build the hospitals that get bombed. They are the people that, like, you know, build the infrastructure. They're also the people that dig up that infrastructure and turn it into rockets. Right.
Yeah.
That dig up the water pipes that are laid by Hamas. Hamas will be the ones laying the water pipes. And then Hamas will be the ones digging up those water pipes and then turning them into rockets.
Or not
right?
even building them at all and turning them into rockets to begin with.
To act like it's one big organized, like, you know, pyramid with one person on top telling his lackeys to tell their lackeys to do the thing is not at all how it works over there.
But there are leaders within Hamas.
Disorganized. There are.
Okay. I mean, it may be a mess.
Yeah, that are going to be extremely at odds with the other leaders of Hamas that run the humanitarian stuff that you're talking about, right?
No,
Wait. Are you saying that there are people that are part of Hamas that are just do-gooders?
Literally, the doctors that run these hospitals are employed by Hamas.
Okay, employed by Hamas. I guess
like they are part of Hamas.
Hamas,
that's the problem.
I know it embeds itself in a culture, right? I mean, it's they talk about honeycombing. They're using the hospital, and then underground underneath the hospital are the terror tunnels.
Right.
So just because someone's employed by Hamas doesn't mean that Hamas actually has some like good parts of it.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the people, the actual people that are not engaged in war, don't have anything to do with the war.
Okay, right? but I'm asking about some is
of
Hamas
those people,
funded by Iran?
Some of those people get a paycheck by Hamas and are labeled by the IDF as members of Hamas.
That's what
makes it very, very, very complicated when you look at like how many of these are military combatants. Which the IDF just counts how many people are like on the Hamas payroll.
Okay, fine. Let's say that all of that's true. The X number of the 400, I'm making that number up, Hamas people that went into Israel, took their women, raped their women, all of that, right? Those dudes.
Yeah.
And let's be clear, they were all men.
Yes, they were.
Where did they get their funding?
A lot of different places. Like some of it came from Oman, some of it came from, you know, the aid that we send to Gaza, but countries.
We sent to Gaza when?
What do you mean?
Like, well,
we've been sending it, like, Gaza is one of the most, like one of the highest recipients of humanitarian aid in the world, right? People make the comparison to Singapore that like they kind of have the, you know, the income, like when you look at GDP and you look at the income part of GDP, they have the income of like Singapore. And they could build that if they didn't dig up all their infrastructure and
turn it into rockets. If they weren't run by terrorists. Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So some money that we gave for humanitarian mm-hmm. efforts that was turned into money for evil mm-hmm. and money from Iran. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my only point in this is that it's not like Iran just popped onto the world stage a couple of weeks ago. They've been funding this crap for months now. Mm-hmm. I mean, more than months, but the currently what we're looking at and the whole Houthi mess in the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. Like that's an Iranian funded group. Hezbollah mm-hmm. is an Iranian mm-hmm. funded group. So it's not just like it's like Iran's like, out of nowhere, you killed our guy. Well, we're going to show you like I've come to be known as the burn it down girl. And if we if they had burned it down from the beginning, I mean, some of this we wouldn't even be talking about.
Define it.
If Israel had, now I am not suggesting that this that actually is the way that people ought to do war, but if they had just completely carpet bombed the Gaza Strip and Hamas were gone, do you think that everything else would have happened? Again, I'm not saying that's what people should do. I don't want innocent civilians to die either.
Yeah, can I escalate that to two entire cities called Nagasaki?
I prefer you
and,
not to escalate.
And
no,
Hiroshima, right? Sure. Because the war... World War II, the Pacific Theater specifically, would have gone on way, way, way longer had we not killed the innocent civilians in Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Yeah.
And that is kind of what you're saying. It's like, yes, the war would go on longer, like, if you don't kill civilians.
Well, and no matter what you do, you're killing civilians. Sadly, that's what war does. Well, I mean, it's one thing it does.
There's different ways to mitigate civilian casualties. Of course. You can't get them to zero, but... like
talk about mitigation. I mean, Israel, more than any other military power mm-hmm. ever... is like giving people all this warning, helping them, mm-hmm. bringing humanitarian aid in. Like, and then we, the West keeps saying, do more of that, do more of that. Yeah.
And actually, it's a fairly low number of civilians. It's lower than ours.
Evan?
Well, like Iraq.
In Fallujah. Yeah. It's like much lower than the civilian to militant count in Fallujah. I'm not pro George Bush. I'm not a Dick Cheney guy. Like,
well, yeah. I don't know. I agree. I think Iran is, I mean, everyone knows Iran is.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're good.
That's why we sanctioned them. That's why we froze their money. And that's why we ended up giving them the pallets of cash because we couldn't, you know.
Hold on. That wasn't we. We unfroze it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it belonged to them.
Right.
But,
okay. Yeah. No, that's what I said.
You say we gave it to them. We gave them pallets of cash.
We gave them their own money. Okay. Now we've frozen Russia's money and we're threatening to give that to Ukraine to go to war with Russia, which would be a very, very bad idea. I don't know. Part of my concern, is that there is a great power that the state wields, in war. One is having a common, and this is all very 1984, you know, having a common enemy, you know, we've always been.
Oceania has always been. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And you know, the money laundering should be pretty obvious. I mean, most of the money that, you know, we like, mm-hmm. you know, earmark for the war in Ukraine just goes to our own war manufacturing or what have you.
Yep.
But also, so it creates a kind of a common enemy for the people, but it also kind of gives us a cause. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so I just got done reading a book. It's a kind of hard book to find, but it's written by Elliot Roosevelt in 1946, he was FDR's son, and he accompanied his father on many of the, and was in the room, like with Churchill and Stalin, like a lot of these post, or actually during the World War II conferences, as the big three kind of figured out, how are we going to win the war? What's our strategy? What does post-war mm-hmm. look like? And his argument is essentially that Churchill wanted to use America to win the war so the British Empire could continue. He did not have a high view of Churchill at all. But also that FDR's plan at the end of the war was for peace. And interestingly, there are a lot of people in the State Department FDR didn't trust. And his argument is that as soon as my dad died, we basically went looking for another war almost instantly. There were people in the State Department and top brass in the military. I don't think Eisenhower's one. Eisenhower's actually portrayed as a pretty great guy, but no surprise. But basically, as soon as the World War II is over, it's like, let's go hit Russia now. Mm-hmm. They're weak.
Yep.
They're weak because they just killed 20 million of their own people just died.
They were the Eastern Front. They were the ones that were actually sending men into battle with like rakes and hoes instead of guns because they just had numbers of bodies.
No disrespect to my two grandfathers who fought either very valiantly in Europe or trained people here. But if not for Russia, we would have lost. I mean, absolutely. There was absolutely no chance. I mean, they won the war. JFK, sorry, recognized that at his famous American University speech, June 11th, 1963. And this was like a no-no. Like, for JFK to say that was a big no-no, you can't say that. But, and like, so almost after World War II, it was like, we got to find another war. And this is the mindset that I'm wondering, is that going on right now in the Middle East? Where, you know, where it's like, I'm not saying it's not a legit war. Like, I think Gaza's forever, never going to change. I think the Palestinians, that's never going back. But I wonder if it's useful to governments to always have a reason for war and to never, like, finish the job. And, you know, because it's, like, beneficial. And there's something so dark about that. And there's something – and I guess what I would say, what is the – let's, like, bring it home. Like, where's the reality?
Yeah.
I would love to see Christians – vote for people, primary people, because let's face it, politicians make these sorts of decisions. Like, this isn't a grassroots thing. Like, someone has to vote on this sort of thing. And just today, I think we voted for like more billions to Ukraine and more billions here and more billions there. Like, does either party have any notion of stopping this mentality? Like, is any government actually interested in its people living in peace? And I'm increasingly getting to the point where I'm not seeing any evidence of that at all. We're supposed to be panicked about the climate. We're supposed to be panicked about a disease. We're panicked about war. We're panicked about the oceans rising. You know, what is it? Does our government actually want us to be at peace? Because it seems like all they ever want us to be panicked about this and panicked about that and constantly in a total state of fear. And I think as Christians, we have to do some serious work to like figure out where our hope is and figure out if we can live in that place and actually have peace in a world where it seems like people want us to just be at each other's throat all the time.
So here's the neocon argument when they say, well, we're not actually sending troops to, you know, Israel. We're not actually sending troops to Ukraine, right? The neocon argument goes like, well, we have a bunch of these like, you know, generation old fighter jets, right? And gosh darn it, Lockheed Martin and Boeing sure, you know, could build us some nicer, new shinier, fancier ones. How about instead of sending men to Ukraine, how about we just send a bunch of old, these F-16s are so old, we don't even need them, we're going to build new ones anyways, right? Which is like a complex where like you have the industry and the military. It's almost like a military-industrial complex.
Oh my gosh.
It's almost like that. Speaking of Eisenhower.
Like an Ouroboros eating its own tail, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Watch the Eisenhower military-industrial complex speech. I mean,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's 15 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube. Everyone should watch it. I tell you, it's just amazing how you watch old things, and it's like, this is a different country. This is a different world. The respect shown to the audience, the vocabulary spoken,
the
gentlemanliness. I mean, and now it's a joke. You know, everything is just so. It's just a tragic joke.
You know, it's crazy. Bush, like before 9/11, ran on an anti-war campaign, right? Because of the stuff going on in the Middle East with Clinton. Obama ran on an anti-war campaign, promised to close Gitmo, never did.
The Speaker of the House.
Everyone thought Trump was anti-war, but people thought he was, and they voted for him because they thought, like, he was anti-war. They voted for him
second time. Wasn't a ton of war during his administration.
There was a ton of war. Started any new wars.
Well, using quotes, but we're sitting here talking about, like, wanting to get into wars.
By accident. He didn't start any new wars. I think the killing General Soleimani almost got us into a war with Iran. And like, I was really upset with Trump about that.
You were?
Yeah.
Huh.
We don't need to start war with Iran.
Well, we didn't.
I know. But we could have. We killed
one of their top. What does it take to get on your good side?
Well, I'm like, saying we didn't by accident, right? We could have. Killing Soleimani.
I don't know, man. Trump's tweets where it's like all caps, do not mess with the United States. You have no idea. I don't know.
It was a deterrent.
Like,
yeah.
It's like crazy, but it kind of worked, you know? And so, but it's not Eisenhower, like in a professorial tone, in a not slick way at all. Just like almost stuttering from time to time. I'm going, this was a really good guy. Now, not perfect.
A lovable man. Yeah.
Arguably, you know, some kind of war crime territory there among all of our generals, but, I don't know. Yeah, I that's something that I'm genuinely like struggling with as a Christian. Like, is, and that's why we have a show called White Pill, because it's like we got to find the white pill. But it's like
for Evan's sake.
Yeah, really, for real.
So he's in spin out.
Yeah, but well, I
my
really,
white pill is that John Hagee's of the world are becoming less and less popular.
Yeah,
yeah, like that's really my white pill. The evangelical movement is kind of turning anti-war, but then this Israel thing started.
I think it's. There's probably just fewer evangelicals, though.
Oh,
I hate to tell you.
Oh,
you might be right.
We turned a white pill black real fast.
Oh, no. Sorry. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Huh.
Okay. Well, I had this article from the Christian Post, kind of speaking of. There's a kind of massive abortion brouhaha. I mean, honestly, we could probably put together several articles and do this for like a whole show. Some interesting things have happened. With the Supreme Court Dobbs ruling, it seems like. It seemed like as long as Roe was there, there was like a movement like against it. Like there was like common enemy. Now that it's gone, it seems like the numbers are going the opposite direction. There are more people pro-abortion now than ever. Whereas before it had gotten to where like more Americans were pro-life than pro-choice. And now something like 72% was the number I last saw of Americans essentially support abortion, which is very sad to me. I mean, it leaves one feeling not quite hopeless, but it's such a primary issue. So there's a lot that could be said about it, but we did have the, you know, Trump came out with his statement where he basically said, hey, you know, don't blame me, you know, I gave it back to the states. The states have to fight it, which kind of isn't, didn't we have a war about that, like states' rights issue of immoral things? Well, that's the corollary.
We kept it civil.
That's the corollary. And then the next day is, I guess, a coincidence, the Arizona Supreme Court. It's kind of a technicality, but they basically said 1870-something ruling that all abortion is wrong. You know, that's the law, not the 15-week law. And then people like Carrie Lake, who I thought was pro-life, and Charlie Kirk, who says he's pro-life. And, of course, Trump, oh, no, they went too far. We can't do that. It's a political loser. We've got to come up with some, you know, some like something we can all agree on, some like 15 week or heartbeat or something like that. Well, the pro-life movement usually comes down, you know, on some kind of compromise like 15 week or 20 week bill, which is 90 something percent of abortions take place before that. So basically where I'm really cynical right now, I mean, like almost depressed, is the pro-life community and Planned Parenthood for 90% of abortions are on the same page.
That's insane.
They are on the same page.
But let me ask you something about the Arizona ruling. The people that are shocking you because they're anti that decision, are they actually anti that decision for a moral reason or because they think it's a bad political move this close to the election? Because they think it's going to, because that's a purple state and it's going to bring out the Democrats in, or the Republicans.
The Republican Party is terrified that basically, at this point, the conservative movement on the issue set is right. You know, immigration, inflation, a lot of people are anti-war, actually, even though their representatives aren't.
Inflation? Republicans do inflation all the time.
No. The people
don't like it.
The people don't like it, and they're going to blame the guy in power for it.
Standing athwart history, yelling, stop.
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
but not actually doing anything.
No. Yeah. Yes, of course. I totally agree with you. Like, gold standard, figure it out. Something.
Yeah.
But if the Arizona ruling had happened, let's just say that Trump wins in November, and then in February of 2025, Arizona had done the same thing. I don't think nearly like what's happening now would be happening because it's like, we're not worried that's going to affect an election.
Then I'm even more depressed.
Oh, I was trying to help.
I appreciate that. No, I think they are terrified of the 35-year-old single woman coming out to vote because they're overwhelmingly liberal. And if maybe they don't think like Biden has a chance to win, they'll stay home or something. But on this issue, it will mobilize turnout in a way that, you know, is like freaking people out.
Well, especially because they're spinning the narrative like we're going back to the 1800s or something.
Right.
With women's rights or
and again, it's kind of a technicality. It's actually you know, because it's like the way it was a trigger law that Doug Ducey passed in Arizona, and the way that it was done, like the Supreme Court saying it's not valid. I guess I'm trying to figure out what to do with it, and I guess here this is I do have a solution, and I wrote a whole essay about this on my a website I write for called Everyman Commentary, which is that basically we need to equate abortion to slave owning, and we need to equate those participating or supporting abortion as worse than slave owners. We need to basically say that the pro-abortion movement is the pro-slavery movement, period. And the pro-life movement should be the pro-abolition movement. Yeah. And we need to say it and say it and say it, and we need to shame the people that are defending the killing of unborn children, because the darkness that is so obviously coming down in our country, the mindset that we are sitting around saying, well, yes, kill them up to this point, kill them, the negotiating we are doing, like Abraham with Sodom, you know, well, how about this?
30 men.
It's gross.
Slight, counterpoint from Ken.
Slight devil's advocate. I am moral consistency demands conception, right? Mm-hmm. That life begins at conception because like you.
Well, I would say philosophical.
Moral, philosophical, biological. Right. Like just being consistent.
Yeah.
Like a, you know, a fetus has everything that it mm-hmm. has minus what are the five things? Like, you know, time.
Well, sled is like size.
Sled. I can't
development,
remember.
Development, location. Yeah.
What is it?
Size, location.
Development is one of them.
Development. And I never remember the E.
I can't remember the E.
I don't know. Might be education.
But, like, that's not to say it's the same when, you know, a miscarriage happens at 5 weeks and a miscarriage happens at, like, you know,
2 weeks
before delivery.
Yeah.
Those miscarriages are different tragedies. And I think Evan, for his, you know, 90%, what you said, you know, makes your stomach upset, that 90% of the abortions that we're talking about anyways happen before, I think it's like 20 weeks, right? But is that a good thing or a bad thing, right? If X amount of abortions are happening, like, wouldn't we, like,
want them to be in the earlier stages?
Wouldn't we feel
stages?
Worse if they were late stage abortions?
But
right?
That's not the argument.
It's not the argument.
Yeah.
Right. The argument is that's against where... incrementalism.
Yeah.
But but you mentioned the slavery example, which is a really good one, because you said you were black pilled about this. I'm very white pilled. If 10 years ago you would have said, like, Roe versus Wade is going to be overturned in your lifetime, you would have said, no, and you would have been right to laugh in my face if I had told you
and
that.
And Texas,
right?
By the way, basically does have the Arizona law.
And you mentioned the slavery argument, which is like if you told slaves in 1950, like, hey, the Emancipation Proclamation.
1950?
Sorry. Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
1850. If you told slaves in 1850 that the Emancipation Proclamation is coming in like 10 years, they would have laughed in your face. And they would have been right to do so.
Yeah.
Right? We just had Roe overturned.
Yeah.
I do think that the political environment, as crazy as it is right now, is not as certain as it was 5 years ago. Yeah. And I'm optimistic about that. That gives me white pill.
Yeah.
Optimism is not a certainty that you will win. Hmm. It's the lack of a certainty that you will lose. Hmm. Yeah. Right?
Look at you just dropping little.
That's my white pill.
It's environment, by the way. Size, level of development.
Environment. Where is it? Is it inside or is it outside?
Right, yes. Right.
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I mean, it seems to me like the pro-life movement, largely abolition movement, whatever, they have all the arguments. I mean, I think the arguments are airtight, and not to be a little bit, you know, Ben Shapiro, but facts don't care about your feelings. Well, actually, they do. Actually, feelings like dominate the entire cultural landscape right now. Like nobody cares about facts.
No one listen. No one will listen to your facts unless they know you care about their feelings.
Hmm.
So I think that, speaking of polycules, I think the kind of radical autonomy that we're living through right now is it, and it manifests itself in abortion, because basically abortion is basically you being able to say, even to your own child, nothing gets in my way.
Oof.
Ooh. Nothing gets in my way of the way that I want to live. And that it's a mindset that ultimately makes actual politics, actual civic society actually impossible. Because we are basically going to be fighting to the death for our autonomous, our autonomous
atomized
lives,
individuality,
you know,
yeah.
And civic society just can't work that way. So that's why it's like abortion is like a cancer, you know, to a society. Even if, you know, what's also kind of crazy about this is, like, I know there are so many people right now who are, they're literally fighting for other people's children. Hmm. And it is just a slap in the face over and over and over to like fight so hard to save the lives of children that their parents want to kill, you know?
Yeah.
So
I don't want to straw man, because, and I think I brought this up one of the last times I was here, they don't think it's a child.
That's right.
And I think that matters, right? I think it matters to say, like, you want to kill children and you think they're children and you want to kill them, right? That's where the disagreement is it a human life worth protecting, right? Is it a human life with legal protections? Is it a person, personhood?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
that's what we're arguing about, and they actually disagree. I think the argument needs to be convincing them rather than, like, you know, telling them they believe it's a child when they actually don't. That's applying an argument that they don't actually make themselves.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you, Ken. Here's what's interesting. I don't think it's just that some people don't agree. I think the people on the pro-choice side, if the baby is wanted, then it's a child. If it's not wanted, then it's not. And I'm saying that not for every one of mm-hmm. them, but I'm noticing this in like pop culture and media. So I watch a lot of trash TV, as you guys well know. Evan's wife and I watch some of the same shows. And I'll notice like in the medical shows when they have the sweeping music, and they'll have the sweeping music on a part where a woman that wants an abortion and she doesn't live where it's legal, but she makes it to the other side of the state line and she can get one. The music swells and it's so beautiful and lovely and everyone's clapping to wow. wipe away tears. And then I'm not joking when I say the next episode, like there'll be a fetal surgery that they pull off on this, you know, 20 yep. week fetus, and mm-hmm. it's never happened before. And it finishes and everyone is crying because they saved this baby's life.
And they're using the word baby.
Yes. Yes. Oh, for yes. sure. Child,
yes.
baby.
Yes. Yes.
My daughter, that kind of thing, yep. you know, like the only difference between those two situations is was sled. It wanted?
Yeah.
Was it no, well, no.
Actually, no. Sled doesn't matter. Yeah,
right.
yeah.
Right, right.
Whether or not
because in the second situation, if it hadn't had the surgery, it would have died.
Which would be really funny. It's like the third episode is them aborting that baby after it was saved.
Oh my gosh! Talk about dark.
That would be so dark.
But that would actually point out the logical inconsistency. Exactly.
And nobody has the cojones to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think you're right that we have to convince people. But it's not just that we have to convince them that every single one is a would-be baby or an actual mm-hmm. baby, but that but they don't get to be the deciders of that. It either is or isn't. And it doesn't matter which episode of Grey's Anatomy it is, right? It matters what's true.
And in well, that case, this is the slavery art. This is why yeah. slavery yes. is the corollary, because slavery yeah. was about saying human beings are subhuman. Or
and then the other people saying they're not human. And you're yes. saying, yes, they are. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, so like when we talk about racism, like that was real racism.
Yes.
Like where they literally said, by virtue of your being black, you are less human. You're yeah. like, I don't know that it was an evolution thing or what, but they did not have, say, the same, you know, inherent rights that other people had. So that's the, it is in each case, it is a stain upon the culture because it is saying that that humans aren't, you know, look, the sign that I use when I sit outside in front of the church is a probably about a 7 week developed fetus, a picture, and it says human being on it.
I don't like those because you've gotten fooled by the elephant one, right? We've all gotten fooled by the elephant one.
I don't even know.
Well, it's
what you're
definitely
talking
human,
about.
But go ahead.
No, where they hold up a picture of an elephant fetus at around like 7 weeks and uh-huh. say, this isn't a human.
Oh.
And then a bunch of us go in
gotcha.
And we take the bait and we say, of course it's a human. Sled. Okay. The only difference between that and a baby is. Yeah. And they're like, no, it's not a human. It's an elephant. Right. And it's
aren't
like,
they
oh,
the funny jokes?
Oh, I hate it. I hate it. Uh-huh. So
article that would be worth looking at. I didn't go through it. I just jumped off. But 60% of Catholics think abortion should be legal. That's from the Christian Post. And in that is a Pew Research poll. And it's pretty remarkable. And yes, like people, Catholics who actually go to church, the number's lower.
Gosh.
Only 34% of Catholics. But this is shocking. 34% of Catholics who go to Mass every week think abortion should be legal.
That's insane.
I mean, why are you even going to Mass? Like, why even bother? Like, the Catholic Church on paper thinks abortion is like the gravest moral
anathema.
Evil. Mm-hmm. It is a mortal sin. You commit abortion like you go straight to hell. Like, and I'm like 34%, 40% of Republicans think abortion should be legal in all or most cases. So, Ken, brother, I am hoping your optimism like wins out soon, because it seems to me like we are on the autonomy rail. Mm-hmm. It's going full speed ahead. No one wants to, no, there's just not much of an interest at this point in the kind of sacrifice necessary to save people. So I don't know. I'm a little black-pilled on that, but. The white pill is that children are beautiful, wonderful gifts of God, and a lovely home with a marriage and a family will make you quite happy. So no polycule and children.
Well, adopt, right?
Also,
like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because not everyone can have their own children, and I'm, you know, again,
even
like
if you can have your own children, yeah. like, choose not to. Adopt. It's wonderful. It is the clearest, like,
also
metaphor of Jesus,
yep.
mm-hmm. you know, like adopting the Gentile people
yeah.
that like didn't belong to the way of God, except for they actually did. They're part of the family.
Amen.
Yep.
We're about at an hour. Did you want to do another? You want to do an honorable mention, or we're
got
good?
Another one?
Do I have another one? What do I have? Taliban? Oh, the map thing. Maybe we'll save that.
Save that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ken, where can people find you?
Here. And at Theology by the Pine events, I'll be stacking chairs.
Aww, there you go. Yeah, that's true.
And
you're I'm all... everywhere. Okay. Instagram and Facebook and our, but you should go to theologybythepine.org because that's where you can find out little, like, actually you can read stories about all of us, including Ken, since he's on the board. He's the only one that actually turned in like a story about like, who am I? And it's actually very good. You should go read it. But you can read that about me and Evan and all the other people on the leadership team. And also contact us. And you can send us hate mail. That happens sometimes too. I'm just saying, if you don't like what we're saying, you can tell us that too.
Yeah. So. And I'm Evan. I'm at First Lutheran, flhouston.org. So thanks for listening. Until next time, we encourage you to question freely, think deeply, and disagree as needed.